Kaffee in seiner besten Form mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Chibo. In jeder Cubo-Kapsel steckt Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Für Espresso, Kaffeecrema oder Kaffee Grande auf Knopfdruck. Die neue Cubo One überzeugt mit Premium-Design, kompakter Größe und kleinem Einstiegspreis ab 29 Euro. Dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie wird jede Tasse besonders aromatisch mit samtiger Crema. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo-Kapselmaschinen in deiner Chibo-Filiale und auf chibo.de.
And now, Veep Thoughts by Kamala Harris.
During Women's History Month, we celebrate and we honor the women who made history throughout history, who saw what could be unburdened by what had been.
This has been Veep Thoughts by Kamala Harris.
Stu Does America.
Get all the Stu Does America merch you need at StuDoesMerch.com. The code is Stu10. You get 10% off your entire order. Even if you buy merch from all the other shows on the Blaze, you still get 10% off with that code Stu10. Check us out on YouTube at YouTube.com/StuDoesAmerica. We've got this show. We've got comedy sketches. We've got live news reaction and so much more. Subscribe and hit the bell so you know when to be notified when we do something new and start a new live broadcast. We're 2 weeks and a day out from the election, so we've got a lot of polls and predictions to go over. Let's get rolling right away and do Kamala's last-minute collapse. Is that what's happening here? I don't know. It kind of feels that way right now, but I'm always resistant to good news. I always think it's going to turn around on me. And I will say, they got plenty of money to try to make it happen. Kamala Harris has raised more than $220 million in just September, outraising Trump 3-1. So there's a lot of cash going that way. Now, of course, there are super PACs on both sides. It's not the entire story of the spending, not to mention that, of course, the candidate himself is a multi-billionaire, so he can dump in money whenever he feels like it as well. That being said, it's not a great sign. You wouldn't want to, you'd like to be on the side with more money. And people are still trying to make this Kamala thing a thing, even though it doesn't feel like a thing, does it? Well, let's look at some of the data on this. And I gotta be honest with you today. We're in like Chartapalooza territory for you. We got lots of numbers, lots of charts, lots of sort of the background as to where we are in this particular race. So let's get into it. Washington Post, who's ahead in the 2024 Harris versus Trump presidential polls right now? This is how they have it. And to remind you on polling averages, there's a little bit of secret sauce in every polling average. No polling average is pure, if you will. The closest thing you can come to pure would be Real Clear Politics, who doesn't like have any special sauce. They don't weight polls. They just kind of come out and say, here are the polls. We're going to average them together. Of course, there is a secret sauce or a special sauce involved because they don't include every single poll. They include the polls they believe are high quality. And I think, generally speaking, would agree with their analysis on that. My point just is that they're all a little bit different. Washington Post puts a little of their secret sauce in, they come up with this. Nevada, Harris up, but by only less than one. North Carolina, Trump up, but by less than one. Pennsylvania has Harris up by two, so does Wisconsin and Michigan, Harris up by two. And then Georgia and Arizona, Trump up by two. The movement, not really much in either direction, according to the Washington Post. You see a little bit of movement in those last three states, not much toward Harris, but a little bit in Wisconsin and North Carolina. So if you look at that and you'd say, this is a very close election, okay, that's your first piece of data, your first pin in the Apple map. It's just, that's where we are right now, very, very close election. Let me give you New York Times, a slight Trump shift with still no favorite, really, in this race, according to the New York Times. Now, the Times provides a little bit of analysis of what would happen if there is a polling error. And here's a situation where I will give you my little rant on polls so that I can yet again blurt out the same exact thing I've been saying for approximately 100 years. Polls are not, polls don't do what we want them to do. Okay, polls are good at what they do. They're not good at what we want them to do. What we want them to do is just tell us who's going to win and lose. That's what we want. That's not what polls do. Polls try to, within about 3 or 4 points, tell you where candidates stand. And that any individual poll is only in that area about 95% of the time. About 5% of the time will be outside of that area, margin of error. So with that being said, when you have a race that is 0.2% different, a poll that tries to tell you what the number is within 3 points doesn't do you all that much good. It just tells you it's very close. It doesn't tell you who's going to win that race. In fact, we almost always have a polling error. Usually, it systematically favors one side or the other. We know in 2016 and 2020, it underestimated the support of Donald Trump polls, and then the election results were better for Trump than predicted. The opposite was true in 2012, for example. In 2022, a lot of people predicted a big red wave. They were super excited about that red wave. And then it didn't really materialize. I mean, the Republicans did get the House, which was very important, but it didn't really materialize in a red wave type of way. In other words, the polls underestimated the chance of Democrats to win a lot of those races. So here are the races, according to the New York Times. You've got national is Harris by one, Wisconsin, Harris by one, Nevada, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Michigan all even, Georgia and Arizona have Trump by two. If the polls missed, like they did in 2022, as I mentioned, they underestimated Democratic support, Harris would sweep all of these states with the exception of Georgia and run away with the election and win it with over 300 electoral votes. If the polls missed like they did in 2020, Donald Trump would dominate a lot of these polls and states and would win all of these swing states and win with over 300 electoral votes. That is just where we are. OK, we're in very uncertain territory. As I mentioned, with the first piece of evidence, the second piece of evidence backs that up. The race is very close. That doesn't mean the results will feel close, but the race is a very close election. There has been a slight shift towards Donald Trump and then the presidential race nationally, 1 point toward Trump, Wisconsin, 1 point toward Trump, Nevada, a little bit less than 1 point toward Trump. North Carolina has gone the other way by a point toward Kamala Harris, Pennsylvania toward Trump by about a point, Michigan toward Trump by about 2 points. Not much change at all in Georgia and Arizona, less than a point toward the Democrats. The bottom line is the blowout state here we're talking about is like Arizona or Georgia, which is like 1 or 2 points. It's very, very much not a blowout. Another thing to back up the thesis that this is a close race. Nate Silver, he makes his money predicting elections. Silver Bulletin 2024 presidential election forecast. His polling average has it at about 48.9% for Kamala Harris and 47.2% for Donald Trump. That is, of course, a national vote total. You might note that we do not decide our presidential elections based on national vote total. He does run a more detailed analysis, which factors in state polls and some fundamentals and everything else. And it does have Donald Trump as the slight favorite now. Again, slight favorite in toss-up territory. And that backs up the indication that we have right now that the election is very close. DDHQ, Decision Desk, along with The Hill, have a forecast as well. Trump overtakes Harris for the first time in the Decision Desk HQ, The Hill election forecast. Now, if I remember right, this is one of the elections forecast that started a little bit late. They turned it off for a little bit longer than when Biden dropped out than some of the other outfits. So they didn't even have that initial period where Trump was ahead, kind of coming off of Biden. Kamala Harris has basically been ahead the entire time. The model, though, a DDHQ, predicts that Donald Trump has a 52% chance to win the presidency, while Harris has a 48% chance as of Sunday. Since late August, the election forecast put Harris's chances of winning between approximately 54 and 56%. In early October, those dynamics began to shift. The election forecast predicted both candidates' chances to win to be closer to 50%. And October 17th, the model predicted the two candidates were equally likely to win. And then Trump took the advantage on October 20th. What they're telling you, though, is it's a very close election. That's kind of the summary of this. Now, if you might look at this and say, good heavens, I mean, we're talking about four terrible years with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris in office. How can this thing possibly be close? And that's a rational question to ask. When you have a performance as bad as the one that has gone on, you'd expect that candidate to be losing by 7, 8, 10, 15, 175 points. I don't know, something like that. And instead, we are talking about razor-thin margins. Why is that? Well, partially because this election really has little to do with Joe Biden or Kamala Harris. It's a lot to do with Donald Trump. And of course, we all know about half the country despises Donald Trump and will never give him a chance, no matter what he does. So when you're in a situation like that, you have a very narrow path to victory. It's not easy to win. Donald Trump won in 2016. It was a very narrow path to victory, a very close election, even though the electoral votes were in his favor. Joe Biden won in a very close election in 2020, according to the final vote count and electoral college. So at the end of the day, you have a very close election and you don't know what is going to happen. What you can do is look at past trends to try to predict. And like another way I look at polls, if you happen to be someone who's into, let's say, you go to Vegas and you might place a wager down on a casino game or a sporting event. Polls are kind of like Vegas. They give you a good sense of what the odds are of something happening, right? Like you can say, okay, if you go into tonight's, what is tonight? Monday Night Football. I don't remember what the game is. I think it's Arizona. If Arizona is an underdog by 2.5 points, you get a sense of how you think that game might come out. Now, Arizona might lose by 20, and they might win by 20. But if they are an underdog by 2.5, basically the point, the game is going to be relatively close is the prediction. And they're slight underdogs to win the game. Does that mean they're going to win the game? No, that's not what polls do. They just give you a sense of what the game looks like going in. And then you have to actually play the game. You have to actually count the votes. That's how this works. Now, the thing about this, and the reason why I bring this up, is because a lot of friends that I talk to are like very pessimistic and borderline on the cliff, on the edge of the cliff, ready to jump off because they're like, oh my God, Kamala Harris is going to win this thing. Why is she ahead in the national popular vote? Even with all that information, you have to understand that this is the best chance Donald Trump has ever had to win an election. Now, he won in 2016, but he was a major underdog in the polls in 2016. In 2020, he was even a bigger underdog. However, the polls missed, even though it was to Donald Trump's favor, it wasn't quite enough to get him over the finish line. In 2024, it's basically an even race. And if past is prologue, if past performance is indicative of future results in this particular instance, you got a lot of room to sit here and be optimistic. Let me give you a day in history. This is October 21st, 2016, 2020, and 2024. What do the polls look like? In the national polls, Clinton led by over 6 points, Biden by over 7 points. Harris only leads by one right now. Obviously, Trump in a much better position right now. If you go back to 2016 in Wisconsin, Clinton by over 6, Biden by over 4 in Wisconsin. And right now, Trump is actually winning Wisconsin by 0.2 points. In Pennsylvania, Clinton was up by 6.2. Pennsylvania, Biden was up by about 5 points. Trump, on the other hand, is up by about a point. He's doing much, much better, 5 or 6 points better than he was in Pennsylvania in the previous two elections. In 2016 and 2020, you saw about a very slight lead for Donald Trump in Ohio. Is anyone even considering Trump losing Ohio this time? He's up by 7 points. Remember, this was the biggest swing state in 2004 and was very, very close in the polls. In 2016 and 2020, Trump won it easily and is favored to win it easily this time. Michigan, Clinton led by 12 points going into that election. Biden led by 8 points. This time, Trump is leading by 1.2 points, according to Real Clear Politics. Arizona, again, it was Clinton and Biden winning in 2016 and 2020. Trump is winning this time. In 2016 and 2020 in Nevada, Clinton was winning. Trump is winning this time. In North Carolina, Clinton and Biden were winning in 2016 and 2020. Trump is winning this time. In Georgia, Trump was winning in 2016. Biden was winning in 2020. Trump is winning in 2024. That's the only state, I think, out of all this entire group where Trump is doing worse than his numbers in any of these states. And basically, he's almost even with himself in 2016. And then in Florida, Clinton was leading by 4.3. Biden was leading by 2.1 at this point in 2020. And in 2024, Florida looks easy for Trump. He's winning by 7.8 points. And I bring up all these different measures because it might have made your head bleed a little bit, right? You got a lot of different measures, a lot of different opinions. There's a secret sauce that goes into every single one of these measures. How do you separate them? How do you understand other than the overwhelming consensus, of course, which is this is a pretty close race, right? Well, the way we do that is the PulseCast. You can go and get daily updates at glenbeck.com/PulseCast, or you can go on our Twitter feed at x.com/StuDoesAmerica. We try to remember to post them every day. I'm not very good on social media, but I do try to do it every single day. And what we do is we took all these polling averages, all the election models, and we're talking election models built by people the Nate Silvers of the world, 538s, DDHQ, and some that you don't know. They're kind of like more independent, election nerds that have built scientific formulas to try to come up with this with algorithms and all these other things, full-blown election models. And then also we add on the special sauce of prediction markets, which is just what everyone thinks, right? Everyone's looking at this information, trying to predict what's going to happen. Those have been pretty positive for Donald Trump. recently and have been correct in judging the movement of this campaign over the past couple of months. So there's some factor involved there as well. When you combine all these things together, we give you the pulse cast. This is not my prediction of where this is going to go. It's just a summary of election experts, prediction markets, and polling averages. And for the first time, with today's update, Donald Trump is in the lead. Now, I say the first time, if you look at the narrative of this election, Donald Trump was, of course, leading during the Joe Biden period. Very early on, he was kind of, Kamala Harris was getting her little media bump. He was ahead for a few days, but hasn't really been ahead in this measure, with the exception of one single day, which was the day before the debate between him and Kamala Harris. Since then, he has been behind by a decent amount, though still in the vague toss-up area this entire time. However, this weekend, the polling, the election models, the prediction markets continue to move in his way. And after about a 2 or 3 week continual rise, Donald Trump now leads a 52.21% chance to win the election. Kamala Harris at 47.79%. Once again, what this tells you is that the election's very close. You would rather have the 52% side of that particular equation, but you're not going to have a hell of a lot of confidence in your victory here. As I said, a polling error in one way or the other is going to be determinative here. It's going to be by far plenty of what you need. I want to break this down, though, on a state-by-state basis and show you where we stand, kind of give you a state of the race as to what we do. And I will also mention that we do have a podcast called State of the Race. It's sort of a sub-podcast of Stu Does America. It's available audio only, and we update it usually at least weekly. Though as we get closer here to the election in the last couple weeks, we're probably going to do even more updates, try to give you this sort of nerdy breakdown on a day-to-day basis. I feel like if you made it through that monologue with all those numbers, you're really going to like this podcast. So go to wherever you get your podcast, just search for Stu Does America. Subscribe there. You'll get the State of the Race podcast automatically put into your feed. So check that out there. Just a little bonus pod as we get closer to the election with only a couple weeks to go. We'll try to give you as many episodes as I can possibly do and my voice can possibly take. We're going to go over to the chalkboard next, show you the electoral votes. Coming up after that, we're going to show you where the Senate stands. It's kind of an election breakdown here on Stu Does America today. Is Kamala Harris struggling? Is she in real danger? We'll give you the whole picture here coming up next.
Stu Does America.
I feel like all my stat nerd fans, my Chartapalooza fans, are still with me after a very number-heavy monologue today. And that's why, if you like numbers, if you like stats, you're going to love Prize Picks. It's America's number one daily fantasy sports app, and it has over 5 million active members, of which I have been one for a while now, long before I started talking to you about it. I just like Prize Picks a lot. It's a really fun way to do this because it's the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's an app where it's just you versus the numbers. That's it. You pick two or more stat categories, player projections. You say, I think that's going to be more, and I think that one's going to be less. And you kind of put them together, and you can win like up to 100 times your money for doing this. Plus, it's a really fun way to add on to a game, whether you love the game or you don't even really care that much about the game. It makes it exciting. Prize Picks is the best way to get action in most sports in most states, including California, Texas, and Georgia now. And it's the only real money daily fantasy platform with an injury insurance policy, so that your lineups stay in play even if one of your players gets injured. If your player leaves in the first half and doesn't return, Prize Picks is going to make sure your picks are still live. And Prize Picks invented the flex play, which means you don't even have to, cash out a perfect lineup, to win. You can win even if your lineup isn't perfect. Download the Prize Picks app today and use the code STUSPORTS. STUSPORTS is the code. You'll get $50 instantly when you play only $5. The code is STUSPORTS on Prize Picks to get $50 instantly when you play only $5. You don't even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It is guaranteed. So check it out. Prize Picks. Run your game.
Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer gut, immer günstig, immer vielfältig. Kurz gesagt, frische für alle. Zum Aldi-Preis. Diese Woche Zespri Sangold Kiwi. Das Stück für nur 55 Cent. Oder dunkle Tafeltrauben. 500 Gramm für nur 1,79 Euro. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
Okay, so we wanted to give you a quick look at the chalkboard here to kind of just give you a state of the race. Where do we stand right now? Where do things look like they're going in the future? I got news for you. I would be shocked if anything changes to make this a race that we don't expect a close outcome. That doesn't mean that one of these candidates might not blow out the other. A polling error in either direction is going to feel a little bit like a blowout if that occurs. But polling is probably not going to move enough in the next couple of weeks to make this look like an obvious outcome either way. It should be pretty close and come down to just a few states. But let me give you kind of a state of the race here, kind of a where we stand right now. Democrats have about 167 electoral votes, pretty much all but locked up at this point in various states across the country. And these are like the big ones you'd expect, places like California, New York, things like that. On the Republican side, about 109. So the Republicans do start off with a solid, when you're talking about basically locked down electoral votes, they do start with a decent disadvantage. And they don't make it up really in the likely category either. Likely Democrats have 41 electoral votes. That includes 2 in Maine, 5 in New Mexico, 10 in Colorado, Minnesota with 10, and New Jersey with 14. Both Minnesota and New Jersey are teetering on the area where they might move to a lean Democrat, but currently we're going to keep them in likely Democrat for now. Over on the Republican side, 39 electoral votes, Alaska with 3, Montana with 4, Iowa with 6, Ohio with 17, and South Carolina with 9. That's 39 electoral votes. And just to remind you on this, we've been doing this for a very long time, longer than I ever wanted to do anything in my entire life have I been doing stupid electoral breakdowns. I will say, in the entire history of me doing this, the entire time, we've never missed a likely or a solid. They've always been right 100% of the time. We've never missed any of those. When you get more towards the middle, especially the toss-up zone, it gets a lot more difficult. Now we have the lean Democrats. These are races where you have a decent indication, maybe a little bit of a lean, but you wouldn't bet your life on these states, at this point at least. Here we have a congressional district in Nebraska. This is the one around Omaha. This tends to go Democrat. Barack Obama won it. It leans Democrat right now. New Hampshire, which was really a swing state for a long time, has moved slightly to the blue side. 4 electoral votes there. And Virginia with 13. That gets 18 Democratic electoral votes. In the leaning category. And when you combine all this, 167 solid Democrat, 41 likely Democrat, and 18 lean Democrat, put that together in the soup, you get 226 electoral votes for the Democrats. On the other side, for leaners, you have a similar sort of situation in Maine. They have a congressional district. They divide them up a little bit differently, with its 1 electoral vote going to the Republicans in that particular district on a leaner. And this is where the Republicans really make up the deficit that they're in right now, if you are counting from the beginning the way we are, with Florida and its 30 electoral votes and Texas with its 40 electoral votes. So they get 71 leaning there for the Republicans. Add them all up, 109 solid, 39 electoral votes in the likely category and 71 in the leaning category. You get 219 electoral votes. That is something you should kind of, I don't know, put into your memory a little bit. 226 to 219 is sort of a starting point for this race. As I mentioned, you know, you can make an argument maybe the Nebraska one kind of comes over. You can make an argument, certainly, you know, maybe Maine floats over here. Am I really worried about Texas or Florida? Not really. Would I be worried about New Hampshire or Virginia if I were a Democrat right now? Not really. It's possible in the right environment that something like this could happen, but I wouldn't be all that concerned with it. So 226 to 219 is a nice little mental starting point, which leaves these toss-up states. And there are a bunch of them. It's really 7 states this thing comes down to at this point. You've got Georgia with 16 electoral votes, Arizona with 11. North Carolina has 16 electoral votes, Michigan with 15 electoral votes, Nevada with 6 electoral votes, Wisconsin with 10 electoral votes, and Pennsylvania with 19 electoral votes. It's a total of 93 in the toss-up category. Now, as I've kind of talked about a little bit, if you have a polling error that goes in Donald Trump's way, he wins, let's say, 5, 6, 7 of those states and has over 300 electoral votes, looks like an easy victory. The same thing happens with Harris. If a polling error goes in Harris's favor, you move 4, 5, 6 of those over to the other side. The Democrats win with what looks like in an electoral college to be a somewhat unbalanced election. That being said, most of these races are going to be pretty close. You'd think most of them are going to be under 5 points when it comes down to the end of this. So really, it's still in a close election. We saw that both in 2016 and 2020. While the races were close in some of these individual states, the electoral count made it look a little bit more of a blowout. But what I want to give you a sense of is where we are when it comes to just straight polling for a second, because I will make an electoral prediction. We got it exactly right back in 2020, which was 306 to 232, if I remember right. But at the end of the day, we may get that wrong. We may get that right. We'll do that on the day before the election. Let me give you a sense of where the polling averages are. Now, we're going to take one. This is the New York Times polling average. And let me just show you what these states look like right now, how close they are. Right now, Michigan, they have at 48 to 48. North Carolina, 48 to 48. Pennsylvania, 48 to 48. Nevada, 48 to 48. Wisconsin, 49 to 48 for Kamala Harris. And then Georgia, 49 to 48 for Donald Trump. And Arizona, 50 to 48 there for Donald Trump. A total blowout, 2 points. Embarrassing for Kamala Harris. You get the point here, though. These things are all less than a point, with the exception of Georgia and Arizona, which are 1 and 2 points. That's how close this thing is if you're just looking at the polls. Let me just give you a sense of what that would mean. If things went exactly that way, which I assure you they will not, but if they did, you'd have Donald Trump picking off Georgia, Donald Trump picking off Arizona, Donald Trump picking off North Carolina and Michigan. And the reason why he would pick these off is he is up by less than 1 point. So even though when you round the numbers, they come out to 48-48 ties, Trump has a little bit of an advantage in North Carolina and Michigan. Same thing for these other three states, except these go to Kamala Harris. Nevada with 6, Wisconsin with 10 electoral votes, Pennsylvania with 19 electoral votes. That's the way the New York Times has the averages right now. Very, very close. What would this mean if this actually happened? Donald Trump would get 277 electoral votes. 277. As you may know, you need 270 to win the presidency. So he is basically, any one of these states fall, Donald Trump loses. Now, Kamala Harris, this, you know, Nevada kind of doesn't really matter in here because it's 277. It's only 6 electoral votes. That's the one that doesn't matter. But, you know, Donald Trump could easily pick up all of these and all of a sudden it would look like he's blowing them out. Kamala Harris could pick off any one of these 4 states, Georgia, Arizona, North Carolina, or Michigan. And I'll remind you that in 2 of these states, she's competitive within 1 single point in these averages. That's where we are right now. That's this kind of the state of the race. We are in a very, very, very close race. By far the closest race I've ever covered, at least as far as the polls and the data are saying. We'll see if that plays out in real life in the first week of November. I want to take a break. We'll come back on the other side and I'll give you a current view of where we are in the Senate. All right, let's talk about the U.S. Senate, where we have a bunch of elections up, of course, but not everyone. This is not like the House. It's not like the states for the presidential election. We kind of have a locked in score to start this race. And that score is Democrats with 28 seats and Republicans 38 seats. Those are locked in for sure already. We know those are going down. Those aren't even blowout races that something crazy could happen in. They're not up for election at all. And this is why this is such a promising election for Republicans. They're already up by 10 going into the battle, so they should be able to win this. However, of course, things get very difficult if you happen to be Republicans, because they tend to blow things quite often. Democrats have 10 likely ones. Again, we've never missed on the likely candidates here. You got California. That's going to be easy for Adam Schiff, unfortunately. You're going to be dealing with him even more in the future. Delaware, Connecticut, Hawaii, Massachusetts, that's Elizabeth Warren, Minnesota, New York, Rhode Island, Vermont, Bernie Sanders, and Washington gets them up to 10. That's, so they're already at 38. They've now tied Republicans. Of course, Republicans also have some likely seats here. Ricketts in Nebraska, Wyoming, Mississippi, North Dakota, West Virginia. That's a takeover state. That was Manchin's state seat. Now they will go to the Republican side. Curtis in Utah, Indiana, Tennessee, and Hawley in Missouri. So you get that. They got 9. So they're already at 47. right? Before we get to anything difficult at all, they've got 47 seats. This should be freaking easy. It's 47 to 38 with really nothing difficult even being decided yet. It does, of course, get more difficult from there. The Democrats have seven that lean Democrat right now. New Jersey, Maryland is an interesting one. I mean, you'd hold up the slightest of hopes here for Maryland, because that's Larry Hogan. Again, he's a kind of an anti-Trump Democrat, the type of Democrat that might have a chance in Maryland, very popular governor. Right now, he's still losing by, I would say, eight or nine points. There's some signs that he's tightening that gap. In a state, though, where Donald Trump's going to lose by probably 20 points, makes it hard to believe that Larry Hogan can pull that one off. New Mexico, Virginia, Maine is actually technically an independent, Angus King, but he'll win that. Nevada and Arizona are the two that you might say, okay, maybe there's a little bit of hope here for these two. This is, of course, Sam Brown in Nevada. He hasn't really been able to make a big dent. That's one of the more surprising races, actually, because Donald Trump has, up until Kamala Harris got in the race, was polling incredibly well in Nevada for whatever reason. They just did not like Joe Biden at all. That has it's become much, much closer since Kamala got in. But really, Brown has never really been able to make that super competitive. Same story at some degree for Carrie Lake, who has a lot of fans in the state of Arizona, but also a lot of people who just don't like her very much. She's going up against Ruben Gallego, who's absolutely terrible, but is leading there, even though this is going to be a red state that goes to Trump. It's another one, though. It's very rare for a presidential vote and a Senate vote to go opposite, you know, kind of a split ticket situation. It happens occasionally. Susan Collins is an example relatively recently, but it's not common. And this would be a surprise if he were able to win Arizona, but Carrie Lake lost. But Carrie Lake, kind of her own thing. She has her fans and her kind of unique opponents, and it could be difficult there. But she, again, some signs of tightening in both of those races. There's seven of those for a total of 45 if you count the leaners for the Democrats. On the Republican side, only three leaners. Remember, they're already at 47 before we go to the lean column, so they should be able to pick off enough seats to get the majority. Right now, I don't have that. I have them getting right up to the verge of having the majority, but not quite there. Texas, Ted Cruz. This race is very close. Cruz was on the radio with us the other day. You know, I wouldn't say panicked is the right word, but intense. Really, really believes he's in some serious trouble there. Now, remember, he won by 2.6, 2.7 over Beto O'Rourke. The question is, will Colin Allred get any closer than that, maybe even get a victory? I'm doubtful of that, but it's not impossible. The race seems to be polling around 2 or 3, 4 points in there. Certainly just a leaner race. Florida is Rick Scott. I'm more confident in Rick Scott's victory in Florida than I would be even of Cruz. You know, look, that's a red state. It's tilting far to the red over the past couple of cycles. Ron DeSantis, obviously a popular governor there. And Scott, who's a former governor there, should be able to hold on to the seat, at least by, you know, mid-single digits. We will see. And then Montana is another big one. This is a race that is John Tester, currently a Democratic senator running for re-election. Can he hold on to a seat against Tim Sheehy? Sheehy's been leading this race pretty handily and pretty consistently for a while now. This is a leaner race. It's not quite into the likely category because Tester is somewhat of a popular figure. Also, Montana, a little bit difficult to poll at times. I find, and I think that, you know, this shows over years and years of data, smaller states at times are a little bit more difficult, a little bit less reliable. When you have larger populations, the states get a lot of times larger sample sizes to predict the state. Just the way, you know, companies, they got to justify their money. They can justify spending more money on sampling thousands of people in California rather than maybe a Montana, which is not going to be competitive in the presidential race. Neither one will. But will be competitive in that Senate race. And you wind up having a little bit more fluctuation. I wouldn't say it's a lockdown for Sheehy in Montana, but I'm pretty confident about that one, at least at this time, with about 2 weeks to go. That leaves us with five in the middle. Republicans have locked down 50 seats. If you look at this here, Republicans with 50. But we still have these five in the middle. Republicans need to pick off at least one of them. And we'll go through them here quickly. You've got Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Nebraska. Let me just spotlight a couple of these because I know we're a little short on time. Sherrod Brown is in Ohio. if any of these races look particularly good in the polling right now, I would say the momentum is going towards Bernie Moreno in that Ohio race. That is something, I mean, Republicans should be able to win that. Democrats are going to lose the presidential race there. Donald Trump will win Ohio probably by 7 or 8 points. And that should be enough, honestly, to pull Bernie Moreno across in a very close election. Sherrod Brown's oddly popular in some circles in Ohio. He's trying to run as this sort of conservative Democrat. Again, there's no such thing. I'll be honest with you right now. If you're one of those people looking at these races, you live in one of these states, you're like, yeah, you know, I don't like the Democrats the way they run things, but Sherrod Brown's different. You know what? He's not. Let's be honest about it. He's not different. He's going to vote with the Democrats every single freaking time. All these big bills that will be passed with his help. He will be there every single time. Manchin was there basically every single time. There was a couple times he opposed and acted all angry about what the Democrats were doing and what happened in the end. He came along in the end. This is what Democrats do. Do not be fooled by these people trying to claim they're not. Tester's trying to do that in Montana. Don't buy it. Brown's trying to do it in Ohio. Don't buy it. And particularly, I beg of you, don't buy it in Nebraska. We have the Pennsylvania race as well that we mentioned with McCormick, who's been tightening that race recently. But Nebraska's the one here. I mean, that should be locked down, right? Deb Fischer should win that easily just because it's a very, very red state. And there should not be really much of a question. Donald Trump's going to win that state by something like probably 20 points. So how can this race be up? I hopefully was the first person who started warning you about this race several weeks ago. But there is an independent here that is running. His name's Osborne. Dan Osborne, and he is running against Deb Fischer. Deb Fischer, not the strongest Republican, not like a Republican with like beloved conservative roots. She's kind of like a normal Republican who occasionally doesn't have my favorite voting record as a conservative, though she's much, much, much better than the other option, which would be Osborne. Osborne is a labor leader. He is a guy who's claiming to be independent when he's actually not. He's supported by massive Democratic money, Democratic super PACs, the farthest left groups that you can imagine. And all are embracing him. Why do you think that is? Do you think he's really independent? Is he really not going to caucus with the Democrats? I mean, look, sometimes we get swept up in political messaging. Sometimes we get swept up in trying to, you know, show our independent streak. I get that. You can't fall for this, though. This is blatantly the same trick they tried to pull on voters in Utah with Mike Lee last time. Hey, we'll throw out an independent. We'll act like they're not a Democrat. We'll act like they're not voting, going to vote for Democrats every single time when they get in and hope that people in a bright red state will be fooled by it. That is 100% their philosophy here. And this is being fueled by three and four to one times spending against Deb Fischer in this race. This independent labor leader is just coming up with multiple millions of dollars somehow. It's so weird how that could happen. No one knew who the guy was 2 months ago, but all of a sudden he's getting tens of millions of dollars to spend on his race. It's so weird. Look, it is transparent as all transparency can be. This guy is going to be a Democrat. He's going to vote. He's working with socialist worker party types that are, working with as far as funding and as far as inside, his aides and inside his potential administration. You don't want it. You don't want this if you happen to be a person who's conservative. Now, if you're AOC, you're totally happy with this. I get it. But if you're not, and you're a person who cares about constitutional values and are conservative, that is a race that absolutely should be won. I mean, and my other rant on this, which is endless and no one wants to hear it, is there's not one nonpartisan poll of this race. Not one. Not a single one. They're all either sponsored by Fischer or Osborne, or there's one independent institute type of outfit that is dedicated to elect independent candidates, which is basically a Democratic front. They paid for that poll. There's nothing. I'd like to tell you who's favored in this race, and I can tell you because of fundamentals, I would assume, again, the Republican Fischer will hold on to that seat, but we really just don't know anything about this race outside of fundamentals and sort of vibes. Right now, Osborne seems to be doing pretty well. I mean, he's spending a lot of money, and it might be able to be enough, so You'd think here you can get to probably 52 if you are the Republicans pretty easily. These three races here probably lean a little bit more towards the Democrats, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. Pennsylvania seems to be getting closer lately. Michigan maybe a little bit farther away. Wisconsin kind of in the middle. Bottom line is that's 52 senators, and it's enough to stop the worst impulses of whatever, God forbid Kamala Harris gets in, or to help with judges and things like that if Donald Trump happens to get in. That's kind of the state of the Senate right now. Lots of politics today. We're throwing lots of numbers at you. Let's get down to some of just the news of the day. We'll do that next. Had a very kind of crazy end of the hurricane season where we got hit by a bunch of stuff very, very late. And some communities were hit that really didn't expect it. You know, this Western North Carolina, Asheville area that was hit with Helene, you know, wasn't like a hurricane area, right? It wasn't like, oh, well, we always get hit by hurricanes. We know what to expect. They weren't really expecting this. This wasn't something that they normally dealt with because they're so far off the coast. How do you prepare for things that you don't know that are coming? Well, you can kind of like buckle down and just pick the fundamentals of your situation, right? The baseline needs, the foundational needs that your family has. You throw out water in that. You throw out food in that situation. If you're talking about that, you throw out maybe the Second Amendment. You want to make sure you can protect yourself. Shelter, of course, those things are important. Transportation. But you might add on to that medication. A lot of people forget that element because it doesn't fit into the normal way we talk about preparation in this country. But the Jace case can help you with this. It'll help you stock up on medication right now so you're prepared. It's a personalized emergency kit that contains essential antibiotics and medications that treat the most common and deadly bacterial infections. These are things that, like, you don't even think about necessarily dying from. But if you don't have these medications, that's what happened. That's what happened to people for centuries. We came up with medical innovations. They solve these problems now, but they don't solve the problem for you if you don't have them. Go to Jace.com and enter the code STU at checkout for a discount on your order. The promo code is STU at Jace.com. Do this now. Promo code STU at Jace.com. Jase.com.
With the intention that they would undo the protections of Roe v. Wade, and they did as he intended. Oh, you guys are at the wrong rally.
That's a response to Jesus is Lord. Look how pleased she is with herself, waving, the condescending smile. I'm so funny and smart.
No, I think you meant to go to the smaller one down the street.
Oh, they really got him there. They got him there. Now, of course, the truth is that his rally was about three times her size, but that doesn't matter. You really won that battle, of course. Now, I don't know what to think about this. I don't think, even just from pure political motivations, if someone yelled, "Jesus is Lord," she heard it, she would say, "Get out of my rally." My guess is she just thought it was a protester. And it's one of those moments that's memorable, mainly because it's like if someone says something to you and you respond like a jerk on Twitter and then realize they actually are 3 days away from dying from cancer, you just feel bad. I think this was, you know, optics not so great when someone says Jesus is Lord and you trash them for it. That being said, in that crowd, it might have worked pretty well. They might have cheered even louder if they knew what was said. I'm just saying that. A couple of other dumb things that have happened over the past couple of days. 60 Minutes is still flailing from their ridiculous nonsense. They say they released a statement saying a different portion of the response was released. When we edit any interview, whether a politician, an athlete, or a movie star, we strive to be clear, accurate, and on point. The portion of her answer on 60 Minutes was more succinct, which allows time for other subjects in a wide-ranging 21-minute long segment. Yeah, it was 21 minutes, but you had a 45-minute interview with Kamala Harris. What happened in the other 24 minutes? Just release the transcripts. You're a news organization. Just release the transcript so everyone can see and they don't have to believe you. Why are you hiding your transcript of a presidential candidate? Of what use would that be? Hard for me to understand, but I don't understand anything that's going on in this world, including a veteran allegedly kicked off a Delta flight for wearing a T-shirt deemed threatening. What did the T-shirt say? It basically said, "End veteran suicide. Do not give in to the war within." They said that was threatening somehow, I guess misunderstanding the shirt. Delta says the situation has been resolved and somebody's going to be flying free for a while. All right, that's all we have for tonight. Tune in, State of the Race, follow wherever you get your audio podcast. Just look for the Studios America stream. You'll get the State of the Race right in your feed. We'll see you tomorrow.